Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and it's flannel panel day today. That means Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, is here. Joe Heschmeyer, a Catholic Answers apologist, is here. Why are you cracking up, Joe, as I'm doing the introduction? What did
because
I do wrong?
People in the comments on YouTube are really upset that I'm wearing a short sleeve plaid instead of an actual flannel. And I'm just going to be honest with everyone. You're lucky I got that close. I forgot it was flannel panel when I got dressed.
It has a pattern at least. This at least is not a solid color shirt.
Aren't you at your house or are you at the office?
I'm at the office.
Oh. Cy actually has several flannel shirts. We have flannel shirts that we keep here at the office.
Joe's got flannel shirts. I see what you're saying. See that roll top desk behind you that's just a prop? Yeah. Why don't you just open that up and throw some flannels in there? And then if it comes up 10 seconds before the show, throw one on. Boom.
I've got a quick story about the office. So yesterday, my kids got to see the office for the first time. And my two-year-old was very excited. And he comes and he looks around and he asks about Zach, who's our video guy, who came out and set up the office. Is this where Zach was living?
That makes sense, though. Yeah. Zach moved out so you could have your office there. Yeah. Kids are smart.
Exactly. So I like that he knew Zach's name, knew there was some connection between Zach and the office looking like it does.
Well, he was living there for a time. Yeah, he did live
for a few days while he set it up. Zach does fine work. We're lucky to have Zach.
And Zach is a dad now. Can you believe it?
That is wild to me. Zach is a dad.
I know.
I've known Zach since he was
not a dad.
Yeah, there we go. We're going to get to Dignitas Infinita. And I'm going to the most important thing with any papal document is to.
Oh, you found out where the accent falls there? Because I think you were calling it Infinita.
I didn't. I'm just varying it up so I know one time I'll hit it during the show. But the most important thing to know about any papal document is what did CNN have to say about it. So we will get to that. But I want people to take the poll first. Just go to YouTube. Go to where we are broadcasting live now on YouTube and pinned to the top of the live chat. You can just take the poll. Did you read the document Dignitas Infinita? And the answers are yes, all of it, some of it, didn't read it, and didn't read it, but I have a strong opinion about it. Those are your choices, but we'll come back to that. I want to take a quick minute to mention what happened in Australia with a bishop of the Assyrian Orthodox Church, which is a church that's very, very close. As a matter of fact, it'd be very hard for people who don't know those communities to know quite how close it is to the Chaldean Catholic Church. People from the same communities are in those churches, mostly from Iraq.
Their rites are identical.
And so often you wouldn't even know which one you're in.
One has a relationship of union with the Holy Father, and the other does not.
But my understanding of the story is that Mar is the word for bishop, and I think it means other things too. But so he's a bishop in the Assyrian Orthodox Church. He's preaching. They live stream his preaching from the church, and a kid, 16-year-old. Allahu Akbar'd him and then started stabbing him. Do I have the basic story?
And then
correct,
other people in the congregation as well, like five other people or something?
Because
jumped on the kid. They didn't attack the bishop.
They jumped on the kid, and then there was some slashing and injuring of people of various ages. And then there was a riot outside because that this kid had come in and done this, and it was an obvious act of religiously based terrorism. So it took a while to get that news out, though, about what had happened. But I guess because it happened on the internet, people found.
People were sharing the actual video of the attack on Facebook.
Am I correct or incorrect about what was yelled?
I think it's explicit. That's right. Yeah. In fact, he later said that the bishop was making fun of his God or something, or his prophet. He dishonored his prophet.
I think the bishop has been very critical of Islam in the past.
Yes. Oh. Yes. And this young boy said this bishop had dishonored his prophet.
I can't imagine why a bishop who lived through the ISIS period in Iraq would be critical of Islam. But it's a horrific thing. One of the things that we do want to say, we have prayed for the bishop here. We certainly pray for our brothers and sisters in the Assyrian Orthodox Church. We know about the close community shared between the Assyrian Orthodox and Chaldean Catholics, and we have an enormous and really fun, beautiful, vibrant Chaldean Catholic community here.
It's the second largest in the United States.
Yeah, Dearborn, Michigan, I think is for. Is that right, Dearborn?
Michigan,
somewhere in Michigan.
That's right. Yeah.
But I mean, if you want to just hang out with wonderful people, hang out with Chaldean Catholics, and I'll extend that to Assyrian Orthodox. It's just a magnificent group. But I don't know what else to say about it except it does seem to me that there's a kind of unwillingness in much media to report on the full truth of what happened and to use certain words in designating what happened. Do you share my view on that, either of you?
So I think not only that, but I think it backfires really badly. Like when people realize that that's what's happening, it feeds a kind of contempt and distrust of the media that doesn't help relations. And you see this with religious relations, you know, here, where, you know, if this was like a white supremacist who attacked him because he was Middle Eastern, they wouldn't hesitate to identify what his motives were and to maybe even seriously question what were the things that influenced someone to do this. And they'd have some hard-hitting journalism and try to hold other people accountable for, you know, creating a culture in which this kind of violence was thinkable to a teenager. And we're not willing to do that same thing when it's more politically disadvantageous ideology. You can't just bash the other side over the head.
It depends who is the perpetrator of the violence and who the victim is. Because in a reverse situation, for example, or I'm sure you can think of another case, the media will immediately start saying, police are investigating whether or not this was a hate crime.
That is
an early part of the narrative when there is interracial violence or interreligious.
But I would even go farther than either of you have gone. If this was a transgender kid who got attacked by a Christian, for example.
Oh, for sure.
Number one story. Every news organization in the world. There's nowhere where that's not the number one story.
Well, I mean, this was the case.
And it would, the headline would be like Christian attacks transgender. It would not be teenager attacks random person.
Right. So,
I mean, they would make that the narrative.
Right. And I don't want there to be anti-Muslim reporting. I'm just saying that you look at this and you feel a disgust at news organizations because you know the standards are. I think they should be careful. I think they should be extremely careful in what they report. I think often we get that, that the story that fits the perfect narrative for them, and they get all excited about it. And then 2 days later, you find out, well, that's actually not what happened. So I'm not saying that they should be less careful with Muslim people. I'm saying they should be more careful with everything else.
So we had an example of this in Oklahoma, right? There was the young teenage boy in Oklahoma who was confused. And he made his way.
Oh, this is like he's the saint of gay rights, but he was killed over a drug deal.
Oh no, I'm thinking. This is the one who went into the girls' bathroom.
And then they
shoved him out, and the next day he was dead. And now I think we've learned he took his life.
Yeah, he took his life, and the reason he took his life is supposed to be these kids, the girls that didn't want him in the bathroom.
Well, and by the way, none of the reporting. Is his pronoun, his actual God-given pronoun, used?
No, right. And then it comes out that
I actually was confused. I'm still kind of at a loss. So you're saying this was biologically a male?
I think. Well, do you know something? I don't know that that's been sort of.
No, I had thought it was biologically a female.
Well, this is the problem: is that the reporting is so opaque. You can't even make sense.
Oh, you may be right, Joe. I don't know.
It's like
and it seems important for the narrative because were these a bunch of young women who felt uncomfortable that a man had walked into their bathroom, or were these women or these young women bullying?
What happened?
The story is actually less clear,
right?
Because of our refusal to just speak openly and honestly about the facts.
A lot of reporting on these issues, especially when they involve these gender issues. when the media tells you about it, it's like your wife telling you about the dream she had last night. And you're like, what happened? Who was involved in this? What like, did they shift gender somewhere in the middle of this dream? Because you can't make heads or tails of it. And my wife, who is a patient, kind, good person, was reading a news story the other day and said to me, I don't actually know what's happening, because they kept referring to the people in the story as they.
Right.
As individual people, right. As they. And she said, when they say they, I don't know who they're talking about. Like, I can't read backwards and go, this pronoun is being as a replacement for this proper noun that was previously given. She said, I don't know which person they're talking about. I can't do it anymore. Right. So, you know, I do think there's a point at which it's just, it's not even feasible practically at a certain point.
Yeah, it does seem like it's just creating bad grammar and less clear thinking and speaking. I mean, I know everybody likes to talk about George Orwell, but Orwell had a lot of great things to say about how if you want bad ideas to flourish, make English less clear.
Yeah, take control of the language.
You see that in a thousand different ways. So that kind of war on language isn't just pedantry. Like, it caring
it has
about
consequences.
Clear language, it really matters for clear thought.
It's Alice's.
Because if you can't make distinctions, you can't think clearly.
It's Alice's very
sorry,
famous,
go ahead.
It's Alice's very famous conversation in Through the Looking Glass with Humpty Dumpty.
The words mean exactly what I say.
What I say. The only question is who's to be master. Who's to be master?
Right. Words
that's
are.
Right.
That's true. That words, they can just become the site of a power struggle. That rather than being things that are meant to help us understand one another, they're being employed in a way to put one side down and to lift another side up.
Yeah, I mean, even the phrase like reproductive rights, getting back
good
on that
Lord.
Subject.
Yeah.
It's not a neutral expression, and it's a false expression. Human reproduction has already stopped by the time abortion is being considered. Reproduction is the creation of a new human organism. That is done at the moment of conception. You can fudge that by calling the entire 9 months of pregnancy reproduction. That's not really biologically true. And doing that obscures what it is we're actually talking about.
No, they should call it
calling it abortion. You're just stopping. Stopping a pregnancy.
Gestative rights. They should call it gestative rights.
Gestative rights. I guess I can see why that hasn't caught up.
Well, but you can almost see it in real time, the media kind of settling on the term that they're going to use, you know, like when new things come along and everybody's using different terms. And then you say, oh, now we're down to two or three candidates for how we're going to bully everybody into talking about this. And I mean, I guess the classic term is Latinx, which people always go, you know, I've never met a Hispanic person, a Latin person who wanted to use the word Latinx. I actually have met people who wanted to, and they were weird. Like nobody else, there's a word, it's called Latino. You don't like it because you don't like that there's a language that has gender. So you're not just trying to be open and open-minded to other people. You're trying to destroy someone else's language.
I thought it was pronounced.
Well, how many of the people who push for it are actually native Spanish speakers? Because it seems like it's the English-speaking kids who want to claim the heritage while not understanding enough of the language to realize
that may
how
be.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, they're the second or third generation.
An X ending.
Yeah, right.
Because if you're going to attack like Latino, Latina, you have to attack like 90% of the language.
Yeah, Spanish
because
doesn't work anymore.
Is gendered.
It doesn't. You can't speak Spanish if you're going
to
do that.
You want to talk about the erasure of like a culture? Just outlaw the language. I mean, this is what the English did in Ireland, where they outlawed Gaelic. If you start policing Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, all these heavily gendered languages, to say no, you have to conform to English with its neutral nouns.
Yeah.
All you're doing is erasing these massive languages
and doing
real violence to them.
It is funny, though, to see these publications like People magazine that went all in on Latinx, and they can't let go of it now. They can't get out of it. They're stuck. Like, what are they going to do? They can't go back to talking like normal people. So all that they just look ridiculous.
I thought it was Latinx.
It's not
pronounced Latinx.
No.
You know, there are other phrases.
Well, also... I was just watching a video about this yesterday. Sorry. I just want to throw this out there. Linguistically, English is a very difficult language for many non-native speakers because unlike the vast majority of the world's languages, we don't tend to end our words on vowels. And so most of the languages of the world do. And so most people are used to the kind of glide that that has.
Yeah.
And it often means that people pronounce English kind of funny.
Like Italians, it's amazing how Italians add a vowel to the end of every English noun. Do you know, like when you're speaking to an Italian and they say it, they go, if you say, where's the toilet? And then they try to say it in English, but they always will add to the end of it.
This is, by the way, why it's easier to write an epic poem in Italian.
Oh, yeah, because
you're
the
saying
endings.
Dante wasn't that impressive, right?
It's like, that was so easy, Dante. It's like playing tennis without a net. But you were making a point, Joe, and I interrupted you. I apologize. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just making exactly that point and just saying when you switch away from that, not only to not gendered, but also not a vowel ending, it shows a total lack of understanding and appreciation for the Spanish language.
Yeah.
And so it's this hilarious attempt from obviously non-Spanish speakers to police Spanish in this way that's supposed to be protective of like Latin identity while doing a tremendous disservice to it.
There should be some kind of phrase for the period of time where the media is still looking for the word they're going to use that they're going to bully everybody else into using. Like, you know, like while we're still negotiating what will be the proper term, we don't say global warming anymore. We say climate change. How did we decide that? Was that a scientist? No, it was the media.
Right.
They went back and forth until they found a term that they felt they could bully everyone into using.
A couple that have been in circulation for the longest time are constitutionally protected. So constitutionally protected right to abortion.
Oh, yes. Even
though the Constitution makes no mention of abortion.
No, I know.
Or the constitutionally mandated separation of church and state,
right,
which also is not addressed in the Constitution.
It's like the use of the word bipartisan. Whenever you want to say something's good, you just say bipartisan. It doesn't matter if one Democrat voted for it. If you're a Republican, that's a bipartisan.
It is.
and the other way, of course, the same.
But it is interesting to see how far back. Sometimes we think, that's been in circulation for a couple of years. But sometimes these expressions go back well far. I bet climate change goes back into the early 90s.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah.
If not,
yeah,
all right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're going to discuss. Well, first of all, again, I don't know. Is Easter coming up in the East, Joe? Are we near Easter for the Orthodox?
I thought it was May 5th. Double check that right now.
All right. Well, we'll certainly pray for the Assyrian
May 5th
Orthodox community and that peace will reign and that all those people will be healed and for the. I want to say young man, but really the boy who committed this horrible crime, that the light of Christ will bring healing to everyone. We'll be right back with more Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at Magnificat.com.
This is Jim Pinto, director of EWTN Media Missionaries. EWTN Media Missionaries prayerfully take EWTN to parishes and the community through the print and electronic media we provide. You can help EWTN share the good news by becoming a media missionary. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today and join us in sharing the eternal word with the world.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Pope Francis is the Pope and the head of the, I got to get my terminology right, the dicastery for what is it?
The DDF?
Dicastery for the
Doctrine of the Faith. He's not the head of that.
No, but is.
I mean, ultimately.
Cardinal, well, he is, yes. This is how the sentence was supposed to go. Let me try it again. Pope Francis is the Pope and the director of the DDF is Cardinal Fernandez.
Oh, okay.
And that's how that sentence was supposed to go. And Cardinal Fernandez has put out two declarations, which is actually somewhat rare as the head of the dicastery. And the newest one is called Dignitas Infinita. And so we will discuss.
Scott, can we make a quick clarification?
Yeah.
A declaration is like the most authoritative thing that he can do
Yeah, that's
in
the
his
top
capacity as head. So that's why it's rare. I mean, for those who aren't familiar with the way DDF documents work.
Okay, thank you, Joe. I do appreciate that. Right, I didn't make that clear. So we've had a bunch of people vote on our question, or not vote, just inform us of did they read Dignitas Infinita? And the possibilities were yes, all of it, some of it, didn't read it, or didn't read it, but I have a strong opinion about it. And yes, all of it came in at 4.5%. Read some of it, came in at 18.67%. Didn't read it, came in at 73.44%. And didn't read it, but I have a strong opinion about it. And by the way, I love you people for being honest. Didn't read it, but I have a strong opinion about it at 3.32%.
I don't
feel like that was a little too low.
Yeah, I do too. And by the way, I think it's perfectly legitimate to have a strong opinion about this document without having read it.
Is that your position? I mean, are you in the position of one of those people?
I started to read it and said I need to find some time in the future
To finish it.
Yeah. So that may yet happen.
Do you know why I said read it with serenity? I learned that from your Archbishop, Archbishop Naumann. I think in his document, I was actually very impressed with this, that he when Fiducia Supplicans came out, his response to it was, I didn't want to have a response to it until I could read it with serenity. And I thought, good for you.
Has he? And has he read it with serenity?
Yes, he has. I thought his commentary was very, very good. I don't know about
it. And he was a little bit pointed. He said, normally controversial documents are sent to us before they're publicized.
Yeah.
And that was not the case. And so he was acknowledging, like, one of the reasons they don't have an immediate hot take is because we weren't given the respect, the kind of the synodal approach.
Yeah.
But I can't read any documents.
But that's a different document. We should pivot.
Right. We'll talk about Dignitas Infinita. I read it, but I have to be honest with you. I only finished reading it a few hours before the show because I wanted to make sure I had read it in case any of you asked me. And we'll talk a little bit about it. But I want to get the most important thing, as I said, with any papal document is what does CNN have to say about it? And this is CNN's headline. Gender-affirming surgery threatens, quote, unique dignity, end quote, of a person, comma, Vatican says.
I like that they put the scare quotes around not gender-affirming surgery.
No, they put
the idea that humans have dignity.
Nailed it, Joe. That's exactly right. Like, gender-affirming surgery is just taken to be a fact. But the fact that a person has unique dignity, that outrageous idea from the Middle Ages. We'll put that in the sneer quotes.
By the way, the Vatican didn't use the expression gender-affirming surgery. They didn't.
No.
That's not what they
said.
Well,
no, but CNN is using it. So, like, they're quoting the unique dignity part, but they're just applying their own heavily politicized buzzwords. I mean, very much our prior conversation. Gender-affirming surgery is a value judgment. It says your gender is the thing in your head, not the bodily reality. And this surgery is affirming the reality rather than what it actually is, which is denying the reality. Your gender is your sex.
Which is why I must say that I'm impressed that Uri Berliner did his report on NPR. And I have tried to find any reporting about Uri Berliner's thing about NPR on CNN, and they are not reporting about it. They have two opinion pieces about it. But and they do have one report today that says Berliner got resigned his position. But they didn't talk about that. They didn't do any panel discussions with Anderson Cooper about that because they don't want to talk about it. This is exactly what's going on at CNN. Of course they don't want to talk about it. But I want to read you the first paragraph of their reporting on this Vatican document, which, by the way, I didn't count how many topics it goes over, but it talks about sex abuse. It talks about prostitution. It talks about abortion.
Immigration.
It talks about immigration. It talks about not paying a fair wage. All these things. This is what CNN, their first paragraph of reporting on it, says. The Vatican has issued a strong warning against, quote, gender theory, and said that any, quote, sex change intervention risks threatening, quote, the unique dignity of a person in a new document signed off and approved by Pope Francis. Can you get more sneering, sniveling, and deceptive than that? That's my question to you. That should have been our poll question.
12, yes. CNN, a news organization.
Yeah, so-called news organization. Thank you, Joe.
There's 12 topics it covers, and you would think from this that the Pope had just approved a document that was like, we should go beat up trans kids or something.
Yeah.
And of course, it's like, that is such a massive distortion of what's actually said, which is, yeah, modern gender theory actually does great violence to the human person.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that and analyze that rather than the kind of sneering dismissal that you talk about. Because the document, I think, is very even-handed in its treatment.
Yeah, well, okay, so we'll talk about the document when we come back. I just was so impressed with the headline and first paragraph of CNN's reporting. It says everything you need to know about CNN. It doesn't tell you anything about what Pope Francis or the Vatican had to say, but it tells you everything you need to know about CNN. We'll continue by looking at the actual document after this on Catholic Answers Live. This year, the Catholic Answers Conference turns to the parables, sermons, and conversations of Jesus Christ. Join special guests Scott and Kimberly Hahn, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and an all-star lineup of speakers September 26th through 29th. Spend time with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and our special guests right here in beautiful San Diego. Seats are still available, but going fast. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 and register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
When it comes to Catholic teachings about Mary, there's one question we hear more than any other. Where is that in the Bible? The answer? Everywhere. In Bible Mary, the Mother of Jesus and the Word of God, Father John Weiss opens Scripture to reveal a Mary who has been hiding in plain sight. Order your copy of Bible Mary today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Conversation about God's truth along with guests and your calls. I'm Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers, and I invite you to join me tomorrow for Beacon of Truth on most of these EWTN stations. Now back to Catholic Answers Live with Cy Kellett.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's the Flannel Panel, Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check here as our guests, and we're talking about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. And here's a little Catholic news. This document on infinite dignity, which was received into the world of the media as, I think they're somewhat shocked and maybe their feelings are hurt because they thought Pope Francis was on their team about some stuff and they had never actually listened to him. And he's always said, I mean, he's the Pope who called gender theory demonic. So I think they were not listening, and now their feelings are hurt because he came out and I say he came out because he approved the document and was very harsh on gender theory. But it's not a document about gender theory.
That's right. It's much bigger than that.
It's infinite.
But I think it's infinitely bigger.
Yeah.
I see what you did there. Like the thing, so I know a lot of people are upset about the language of infinite dignity, which is the language St. John Paul II uses.
Once.
But I think, yeah.
One occasion in 1980 at an Angelus address or something.
Well, explain to me the controversy over the infinite dignity, because there is a kind of...
So there's two ways you could understand it. One is to say humans have a dignity like infinite in the way God has an infinite dignity.
Which would be
and
wrong.
And that's not what we believe. That's not what, yeah. And it, I don't think it's what the document is trying to suggest or teach.
So, Joe, let me ask you, does the document suggest, it seems to me to suggest or state that man's dignity is in fact ontological, that it's something of his being in his nature? Because the document says this is knowable by reason.
Yeah.
Not by revelation.
Yeah.
Okay. So, by the way, I'm not even certain that's true.
I think you're created in the image of God.
Yes, but you know you have infinite dignity. This is knowable by reason.
Oh, I see.
So the ontological dignity, I think, is knowable by reason. And I think you could put it to the test this way.
I don't think history demonstrates that. I don't think that the
Well, you think you can find plenty of examples in people denying things knowable by reason throughout history. That doesn't disprove it.
But this,
the fact that some people don't get to where reason could get doesn't mean reason can't get there.
But so yeah, that is one of the things that Aquinas would say, that it knowable by reason is not the same as accessible to everyone by reason.
Okay,
it may be that only very.
I mean, St. Paul says the existence of God is knowable by reason.
Then I would. Then I would have expected someone to have observed this before Piccolo de Mirandola or something like that, with these, you know, Renaissance nuts.
Well, yes, I think that there is a way of getting at it where you could say, okay, what would it cost to, you know, get me to sell my house? What would it cost to get me to, like, give up every material possession I have? And there's realistically some dollar value to all of that. But if you said, what would it cost to,
not
like,
very high in my case,
like,
Joe,
torture my child or, you know, kill a person or something like this? There's literally no,
right.
You could offer the whole world and it wouldn't be worth it. And so in that sense, believers and non-believers alike, if they're saying, act as if human dignity transcends every material thing on earth. And so it belongs to another order of reality.
Because there are different infinities. And
right.
And but if you could say human dignity is inexhaustible, that like you could never exhaust the dignity of a human person. You could replace that with the word infinity. I'm not a philosopher, Joe, but it seems to me that if you could say, and I don't think anyone would say, well, human dignity is exhaustible. There is a point at which you could extinguish all of the dignity.
What are some synonyms for dignity? Worth, merit, no, not merit, worth, value.
Yeah, worth, I think.
Can something have infinite worth?
Yes.
I mean, dignity.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Really?
Yes.
Worth is something you measure. Now, it can have a very high value or high worth.
No, but as Joe said, like the life of a child, there's no amount that a direct assault on the life of a child that would compensate the direct assault on the life of a child. It's infinite. You could say to me, I will give you infinite money, wealth, power, whatever. It still could not compensate for the direct assault on the life of a
How
child.
Can infinity be a property of something that's created?
Because there are different kinds of infinity. You could count an infinite number of numbers starting at one. You could say you could count an infinite number of numbers starting at 10. Well, those aren't the same thing, but they're both infinite. So you can have an infinity that has a starting point.
They do seem to me to be the same thing because they're both infinite.
Like you could say there's an infinite number of numbers potentially between 1 and 2 or between negative infinity and positive infinity. So we do talk about different scales of infinity, like in mathematics.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Joe. You were going to try to clarify this sort of ontological understanding of dignity that is achievable with human reason, even though the occasions when that's been demonstrated in human history
No, because I think you find plenty of examples on both sides on this question. You find people who act as if humans have an inalienable dignity that can't be bought or sold for anything in the world. And then you see people who act to the contrary. The idea that something's knowable by reason, again, doesn't mean everyone's going to live by that. So, I mean, I guess I'd just respond by saying, if it weren't for the light of the faith, would you imagine you could you know, torture an innocent person for a certain amount of money?
There have been lengthy and extensive peer and near universal peer institutions such as slavery have not gone away until the Christian age.
But there were always people who knew it was wrong.
Really?
Yes.
Prior to Revelation?
I mean, I'm not talking about servanthood.
Certainly the mistreatment of slaves was universally cross-culturally recognized as wrong.
Yeah, but
apart from Revelation, there were people who at least knew treating people like garbage was contrary to something.
But you could take a more extreme example. You could say everybody knows that friendship is a good that should not be violated. That is, every single person knows by the light of reason that you should not betray your friend. How much money would it take to compensate for betraying your friend? There is no amount of money that you should accept to betray your friend, because the friendship with the other person has a certain kind of infinite value. That means that other person has an infinite value. We do know these things. If we don't know them consciously, we intuit them. That anywhere you go in all the history of the world, you said, oh, he betrayed his friend for $1 million. Nowhere goes, that's a good deal. I mean, unless you're morally, unless you're bad. I mean, no good person says that.
But our tradition actually...
Yeah, Dante puts Brutus in hell.
Yeah.
The bottom of hell. Bad part.
With Judas.
Yeah, but Alexander the Great, as rotten a person as he was, and he was in many ways a rotten person, he knows you're not supposed to betray your friends.
Right.
So that we can know by the light of reason that there are some things that are more valuable than anything else, and one of them is your friend.
So, yeah, maybe there's another way of saying that besides infinite dignity, but it seems to me that it's pointing to a reality that is knowable by reason, which is that there are some things that are at the appropriate level of the material world where you could say, is there a certain amount of money I would part company with my pet so you could, you know, kill my pet? Yeah, I'm sure there is. I don't have a pet, probably for the best. But
how much
I wouldn't
do
that to... Yeah, actually... No answer. But I wouldn't do that with my family, right? And anyone who doesn't get that difference has something wrong with their human reasoning. To the extent that even we treat our dead better than we treat living animals. Like a dead human is treated with respect that a living chicken is not.
I'm going to accept this principle as you're arguing it. It does make some sense. What I don't understand is how it has application, for example, in the world of guilt or innocence. If someone is guilty of a capital crime, he's surrendered some of his worth.
But the document does say that. But it wants to distinguish between ontological dignity and other kinds of dignity. That is, as a being, you cannot lose the dignity of what you are, but you can lose moral dignity. You can lose social dignity. You can lose existential dignity. You can't lose the dignity of what you are. That's that's inexhaustible. There's nothing you can do that will take away the basic dignity of what you are, because the God who loves you made you, and he made you in his image.
Well, if that's the case, I don't understand how that frees someone guilty of a capital crime simply based on this ontological dignity. I mean, if that were the case, then he should be freed of lifetime incarceration.
I think that there is something to that argument. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to argue that. And I don't understand. I do think maybe the only two things that seem to me that have raised controversy among Catholics, you know, I mean, not CNN, but among people who practice the Catholic faith, are the use of the word infinite and the sentence about the death penalty being beneath human dignity.
Well, also the treatment of war.
The treatment of war? I didn't realize that. Okay, so that also has garnered some controversy.
I'm actually sort of sympathetic.
Yeah, I mean...
In a practical way, even if I'm not necessarily prepared to follow the philosophical argument that Cardinal Fernandez is making. I'm sympathetic to the idea that it is increasingly difficult to prosecute a just war in the modern period. Now, that's not what the sentence exactly said. It was something along the lines of, you know, very difficult nowadays to invoke the rational criteria elaborated in earlier centuries to speak of the possibility of just war. I actually think that's true, but that has something to do with the destructiveness of modern weapons and things of this nature.
Yeah, right.
Whether or not it derives from human dignity or infinite human dignity, then maybe Cardinal Fernandez and I might disagree. But
also,
he's
quoting Pope Francis. But notice he says it's very difficult to invoke it. That doesn't seem to mean that it's a
Benedict said similar things.
Yeah,
he was kind of a peacenik.
John Paul II said similar things. Yeah.
Right. I mean,
I'm not troubled by the just war stuff. I don't like man being the measure of all things, which is the
vibe. Oh, is that I hadn't thought about that.
Which is the vibe I get from this thing.
Oh, okay.
But you know, full disclosure, you've read more of it than I have. But
no, I didn't see that objection, because what my kind of lens that I was reading it through was that the folks at the Vatican would say that the primary contribution, I think, that Christianity has to make to public discourse, other than the you know, the proclamation of the good news, but the where we want to participate as you know, on the level of reasoning with other people, reasoning together, is to remind people of the dignity of the human person, because that's the primary thing that's getting damaged by modern modes of living.
So that's an offense against the human person, but the more fundamental problem is the offense against God or his law or his natural law. I mean, I have an easier time with the natural law than I do with human dignity. Because the transgendered thing, first of all, offends against God, it offends against his law. And that actually, to me, is abundantly self-evident.
I see. Yeah, I didn't pick up
I keep interrupting Joe, because I think if I can
go
just
ahead, Joe.
Keep, no, I, no, actually, my plan is if I keep talking, then he won't be able to, you know, make this coherent argument, and then I'm going to look foolish. But I, you know, in the end,
let me ask you this, Joe. Does the natural law argument, is it given too short a shrift in this document, or because
I
didn't even occur to me.
Doing natural law stuff in a very particular mode.
Okay.
So I think there's a reference early on to the UN Declaration of Human Rights. And if you know the backstory behind that, the Catholic philosopher Jacques Maritain is really influential in putting forward what's basically natural law. But what it's trying to do, I think, is to say, because, I mean, it's a UN document, saying kind of no matter how we get there, whether it's from revelation or a coherent theory of natural law, or some other route, we can all agree that these important things are contrary to human dignity and shouldn't be done. And this is a really important step in human rights law and international law, and trying to create a kind of moral framework with which we can have a civilized conversation, for lack of a better term. And I think this is trying to show that, A, this is still true and there are new threats to this with things like gender theory, and B, that ultimately this human dignity that people kind of intuitively grasp is rooted. Pope Francis says the wellspring of human dignity and fraternity is in the gospel of Jesus Christ. That if you have, from reason, realized there are some ways that it's immoral to treat another human being, you know, regardless of religion, the Holocaust is wrong, you know, all of those things. If you can say, let's start at that point, well, that points to the fact that humans have a God-given dignity that wouldn't exist if they were merely a product of evolution. Because if they're merely one more product of evolution, then you couldn't say they have the kind of dignity that you and I know that they do have. You see, so I think it's making an argument to the gospel from human dignity, while also fleshing out what human dignity means in a variety of practical contexts.
So I am inclined to conclude while I certainly agree with Maritain and you, Joe, this has been an unsuccessful political project, and what in fact it has done is created larger, in fact, more tyrannical governments, because the things that are done in the name of rights, actually, to our earlier conversation, like killing babies in the name of rights and things of this nature.
So the
failure to have these kinds of moral and socially moral arguments very clearly rooted in natural law is a difficult path to follow. I think it's been problematic.
Well, let me just tell you, when I read this document, I read it to me just as I was going to say normal Catholic, but take that. I know you guys will laugh if I say I'm a normal Catholic.
I think you're pretty normal.
Am I normal? Okay, so thank you. I appreciate that. It seems to me almost like a document that's going to, the intent of the document is to help Catholics know how to talk to the world about these things. So here's how a Catholic talks about immigration. Here's how a Catholic talks about sex abuse. Here's how a Catholic talks about abuse of workers. And it's almost like a catechism of dignity, kind of like here's the thing that holds it all together is this basic idea that, you know, there's three reasons that a Christian believes a person has dignity: because they're made in the image and likeness of God, because Christ himself became a man,
and because
our destiny is communion with God. If we hold those things about the human being, then every human being that we encounter becomes not just, you know, somebody who's in our way, or, you know, won't go fast enough at the checkout line, but they become a thing of unspeakable, shocking value, infinite value, as a matter of fact. So I almost feel like this thing is a primer on here's how you talk about these things with a modern world.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, if that reading is right, and I'm inclined a bit to it myself, it seems to me very similar to the project of people like Robert George and Ryan Anderson in the U.S.,
yeah,
where they're doing a lot of, you know, we call somewhat derisively new natural law, to basically say, however you get to the reasons you've gotten to, there are certain things we know to be true, and let's build from that foundation. And as far as poli-sci works, as far as political discourse and all of that, it seems to me to be a perfectly valid project, although certainly not one without failures and limitations. I guess in that way, it seems kind of a piece with something like Donum Vitae. You know, John Paul II has actually plenty of documents on, you know, the gospel of life and on the gift of life and trying to speak the truth of the gospel into very complicated political and modern situations.
Well, I am on the record as being not a great fan of John Paul, his writing style.
What?
But I got to say, I mean, I'm a fan of the man and of his thinking. Just his writing style bothers me sometimes. But I think he writes more clearly than this document. I honestly don't read this and go, well, that's all helpful because of the shining clarity of it. I do feel it's helpful. I did come away feeling that it's helpful, but literary critiques aside, let's take a quick break and we'll come right back with more Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards is our show for young adults.
Everybody's talking about encounter. Everybody's talking about that mountaintop experience. What we fail to often talk about is what happens after. What happens beyond that Damascus moment?
Jesus Christ is calling all of us to be missionary disciples, disciples of Jesus who are on mission to bring the kingdom of God here and now on this earth.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards, Saturday at 8 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Flannel Panel. We've been talking about a bunch of different stuff, and we're ending with a conversation of Dignitas Infinita, the new document. It's kind of hard to describe how these documents come out. So you want to say Vatican, the new Vatican document, but it's under the signature of, or over the signature of Pope Francis. So it certainly seems to reflect his thinking. One thing we didn't get at is it gets very specific about some things, and I thought that's very helpful. Like, there's a whole paragraph on surrogacy, for example. We didn't just leave this in the realm of the theoretical. Like, okay, here's all this big talk about dignity, but what does that mean as far as, you know, surrogacy, which the world seems to have accepted surrogacy.
Right.
And
endorsed and embraced.
The immensely worthy child becomes a mere object, it says.
Yeah, it's a kind of slavery. Doesn't our friend Layla Miller equate it with...
Does she say that it's a kind of slavery?
Yeah, well, or human trafficking. She calls it human trafficking.
But
I think I've made this point on this show before, but I do find it very funny. It's maybe not the right word for it, but grimly ironic that the people dressing up as like Handmaid's Tale characters, because it's like the only book they've read since high school, are seemingly unaware that that book presents in its dystopia basically surrogacy.
Yeah.
Isn't that something, Joe? I hadn't thought about that. That is an irony. I don't know if it's a humorous irony or because there's painful ironies. That's so sad.
Well, the difference, of course, is I choose surrogacy. It's not being forced on me. So if I desire,
yeah, as long as everyone's on an equal economic playing field, which obviously isn't true,
right?
Like, and the child doesn't choose to be,
of course,
the product.
Yeah,
of
as an oppressed and abandoned South Korean woman who's getting $10,000. From a couple in the United States. This is a perfectly free decision I'm making that perfectly comports with my dignity.
I mean, it's worth considering that in the U.S., as in most countries, it's illegal to sell your organs because we don't believe someone who's resorting to that is in a position where they're free to say no. That if you're selling your kidneys, something is so deeply wrong that the person paying you has enough money to buy a kidney for $40,000 and you're poor enough that you need to sell a kidney. You are not in a situation where you can make a free and fair contract. And yet when it comes to the womb, we treat it very differently than every other part of the body and say, oh, no, you can sell that.
I know.
I mean, you can't sell it in some ways, but you can sell it for surrogacy.
Yeah, you can't sell it in some ways. Right.
I know libertarians who say it's perfectly acceptable to sell yourself into slavery.
Oh, of course.
Well, I mean, I think they're nuts.
Yeah.
Right. But there's a consistency there.
Yeah,
but the vast majority of people who
are everything's a contract.
Yeah.
And so, right, if you're against organ donation, or, you know, organ donation for money, and if you're against prostitution, but you're in favor of surrogacy, I have to tell you, I don't understand the through line of your thinking that leads you to those three positions or how you could hold those three together.
Which is why a lot of people will say, fine, let's have prostitution and let's sell our organs. Like, I do think we have to be careful with the moral arguments we make because... You think you're saying something ridiculous, but the other side goes, no, all right, let's do that.
Yeah, we're like, fine. Prostitution for an arm and a leg?
Like, we used to think it was outrageous when we would make the argument, well, if you can kill a baby who's 6 months gestation in the womb, why can't you kill a six-month-old baby who's been born? And that used to be like, oh, that's our ad absurdum argument. It's not an ad absurdum to a lot of people. They go... And I say that they do this because they've done this on this show and many more than one or two times. They've said, "Yeah, I agree with you. Why shouldn't we just kill 6 month olds if it's not working out? You know, if it's I thought I loved you, but I'm out of love now. I've run out of love. So why can't we just kill them?
Yeah.
There is no ad absurdum argument anymore.
No, because we kill the elderly.
One. It can still be helpful presenting those for a couple of reasons, because people listening to that realize the barbarity of a certain position when you see someone just take it to its logical limits and you say, oh, okay, I actually don't want to get on this train if that's where it's leading. And two, I think sometimes the people themselves will realize like something feels wrong about me defending that position. But the last thing I'd say is the reason we don't do that is because everyone should know on some level a six-month-old has...
Infinite dignity. I knew where you were going to end it. I hope the stories weren't all downers this time. We try to have some we try to do some uppers.
We're going
to
have a lot of fun on the Catholic Answers Cruise.
Because we do have a lot of fun together. So come on the Catholic Answers Cruise with us.
CatholicAnswersCruise.com.
June 29th, we start in Montreal. If you want to come for a couple days early, we're going to go see the...
Tecari Tecuquita.
Tecari Tecuquita. We'll see Blessed Andre, you know, the oratory and all that. And Joe will be there, and I'll be there, and Jen will be there, and we'll be having fun. Find out all about all of it at CatholicAnswersCruise.com. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.